Welcome into the ESPN FC studios alongside Craig Burley, Shaka Hislop. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us. Busy show today. We've got Don Hutchison joining us in a little bit to discuss all that happened in the Premier League weekend that was. But let's start with the one match in La Liga on the day, Barcelona and Granada. A difficult, difficult day for Barcelona. Got off to a terrible start, Shaka, here just 2 minutes in. Domingos Duarte, the wide open header.
Yeah, initially Busquets doesn't do a great job of trying to win the ball back. Escudero puts the cross over. Ter Stegen comes into no man's land for some really strange reason, and the ball over the top of Frenkie de Jong. Can't miss from there, Duarte.
Some cross, though,
It was. Really good cross.
Barcelona nearly getting an equalizer just on the stroke of halftime. Araujo denied.
Yeah, it was a brilliant save from the keeper here, just backtracking. As soon as Araujo headed that, I thought, that's it.
More from the Granada goalie. Again, just before the half, Barcelona pressuring. Sergiño Dest's shot. Maximiano the save.
A cross comes short. I'm not sure if it's sneaking in that far post or it's intended. But Maximiano, again, equal to it.
Barcelona looking for an equalizer here. Luke de Jong.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's his forte, isn't it?
Supposed to be.
No, I mean, heading over.
90th minute. Barcelona do finally get an equalizer. It is Araujo.
Yeah, I mean, the only way that you felt it would come for Barcelona, just some type of a cross, a defender getting forward and headed it in. Their football was really poor. They have to come themselves lucky to at least get a point.
In the end, they do rescue a point at home. But how about that? Barcelona dominant in almost every statistical category except the one that matters, and it takes a 90th minute equalizer to prevent them from dropping their first game of the season.
It's the expected goal stat that upset me when I saw that just before we became live here. 0.64 for Granada to score when it was an open goal at the back post. Mm. And that's only a half chance. I mean, I don't know, utter nonsense. But I was actually a bit disappointed when Barcelona equalised. Mm. Not because I'm a Real Madrid fan, I'm not, or an Atleti fan.
Granada?
I'm not. Not a Granada. Just because I felt Granada battled, played well in the first half in particular, defended with a life, particularly the two centre-halves, that's a cliche, I know. But really dug in, and bearing in mind that they made seven changes as well from their last game. And Barcelona, I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's a lot of youngsters there, right? I get that. But, boy, this is just not a patch.
Mm.
A patch on anything this club has put on the field in the last decade or so, whatever it's been. It's painful to watch them just, you know, plod away in that first 45. Lots of crosses in the box, but with no real quality. Then he has to bring on Luke de Jong and take a midfielder off. I think it was Sergio Roberto went off. Mm-hmm. Drops Frankie de Jong a little bit deeper. Drops Memphis Depay a little bit to the left. And also Philip Coutinho. Oh, God, Bennett. I know he's not played for a while.
First start in 10 months for Barcelona.
Well, they might as well have sat in the stadium and just watched, because that's all he did.
I have to agree, Craig, here. And 77% possession. You're watching this game. It never felt like that. It never felt like Barcelona, even when they had the ball, they knew exactly what they were going to do. It seemed, and it felt like a goal could only come from a set piece,
slung
into a defender coming forward. And the fact that Barcelona finished that game with their two centre forwards being Luke de Jong and Gerard Piqué tells you everything you need to know, not just about this game, but about Barcelona in general. It really, really was that bad.
And it's not Piqué going up for a last-minute set piece. He came on as a forward.
Yeah,
Really. That's how desperate it got for them. Yeah.
In signs of desperation. Here with us to break this down further, we got Casey Keller and Gemma Soler. Casey, I'll start with you. What'd you make of the Barcelona performance today?
It was pretty pedestrian. I mean, I think we expect to see Barcelona over the last 20, 30 years be able to take teams apart, have pace, have power, have just world-class players across the pitch. And it really was a case, obviously, look, the game fell into Granada's hands, scoring that first goal, packing it in defensively, and doing a very good job, as Craig and Shaka mentioned, you know, of defending very well. Goalkeeper made some good saves, everything else. But you expect so much more from Barcelona. And then Shaka's point, De Jong and Pique have to come up and be your emergency strikers to scrap a draw at home against Granada? Yeah, it's panic stations for Barcelona. Mm. The fact that they're still unbeaten is remarkable. It'll be interesting to see when they have to start playing some tougher opponents.
Yeah, they got three games this week. Gemma, the reports out of Spain are that Ronald Koeman is managing for his job this week. What do you think the reaction will be after this performance?
Hola, Seb. Definitely Ronald Koeman. He was before this game. He's definitely now walking on thin ice, not so only because of the draw, but probably because of the picture we have after this game, because he was unable to find resources. Of course, he didn't know Granada will score in the 2 minutes and they will go in the back, but he knew the players he will be having. He had 6 days to train after the Bayern defeat, and he didn't have resources at all. Actually, there was criticism into the stadium. We listened to whistles against Ronald Koeman, against some decisions. Even he played with the youngsters. Ricky Puig, who is very much a request from the president, from the stadium, he was there at some point. But it was quite shameful to see Barcelona play, because they spent 20 minutes sending crosses into the area. Doing like that, Gerard Piqué as a central forward. It was something very strange to watch. It's a draw, and definitely Ronald Koeman, he has 4 finals ahead of him, 2 La Liga games, then Benfica game, and definitely that duel in the Metropolitano against Atletico.
Look at this 11, Demir, Balde. I mean, those are kids. Coutinho, who hasn't played in 10 months. We talked about Piqué and De Jong. I mean, how much of this can we put on Koeman when the team is that weak?
Yeah, but that's, you know, how weak are Granada?
Mm-hmm.
This is at the Camp Nou.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the buck stops with the manager here in terms of the performances. Everyone knows the problems that the club have had, but we still have these very talented young players. And I think...
You think they'd do better with another manager?
Probably, yeah.
I'll tell you what will be better. I think they'll have an identity with another manager. Mm. And that's my complaint about Ronald Koeman and this side. All right, you make a whole lot of changes, fine. Philippe Coutinho comes in, despite the name, despite the price tag, he hasn't played, and again, he underperformed. Fine. But you look at Barcelona at home to Granada, who seem to be playing without any kind of direction. The only kind of joy Barcelona were getting was down that left-hand side in the second half, when Dest went over there and Memphis Depay drifted over there. Other than that, nothing from the right, nothing through the middle. We've spoken about the centre-forward situation and the fact that not only do you put these two big bodies forward, the only real plan to get the ball to them is get the ball to Depay, who, in fairness, the right back did a really good job up against, and sling something across the face of goal and hope for the best. We are talking about Barcelona here. We are reminded, or we cannot forget, the kind of football that Barcelona played, 4 or 5 years ago, and now all of a sudden this is what we're being asked to accept.
But those players are gone.
Those players are gone, but the identity remains. And Ronald Koeman does not have a plan to get any kind of an identity out of this squad. Whatever you make of this squad, Barcelona are still without that identity, and I think that is down to Koeman.
Ronald Koeman, I mean, look, if you're a good side in Spain, I mean, a better side than Granada, and you're looking at this Barcelona side, I think your thought process is, let's play the counter-attacking game against this team, because they haven't got the players to break us down that they once had, obviously. And we can really expose them if we suck them in and hit them on the counter, better than Granada did. So I'm talking about the better teams in Spain from the middle of the table upwards. I think they can really, if they play cutely, expose this Barcelona side. That's how weak they are. Look, we know it's a tough time for the club, but we also know, and I think most supporters know, and I think the club probably know themselves, that Ronald Koeman has really not done much in his managerial career to be sitting in the hot seat at Barcelona, apart from the fact he was a Barcelona legend as a player. Right, now that's only going to buy you so many miles. But trust me, this is a side that could, at this moment in time, easily be struggling to get into the top four in Spain this season if they continue to play and defend and attack in the manner in which they did today.
Gemma, Craig mentions the supporters. What do you think the reaction from the fans will be? We heard a lot of whistling today.
Well, the supporters are, of course, very sad because we come from a very tough defeat against Bayern. Actually, it was the third game in a row where Barcelona in the Champions League lost at their own stadium from a 3-goals difference. That was very strange. Not so long ago, it was a fortress, almost the Camp Nou. Now it's a place where any team can pick anything. What do you think the rest of La Liga teams will think after this game? We can hurt this team, of course. So Barcelona is no longer respect. And about the coach, also, I was expecting a little bit of more mea culpa. I was just listening to Ronald Koeman press conference. He only argued, I have a lot of injured players. Well, you know that. Is Roberto Moreno having more players in Granada? Probably not. You're playing at your own stadium with your own supporters. I was expecting a little bit more for this coach. I also think it's not only Ronald Koeman's fault, because I think this team, this kind of games, there is someone that was always going to solve it. This player was Leo Messi. He's no longer there. So I think this team, in this kind of position, they have lived so many years with Messi dependence. He's no longer there. They don't find solutions. Not the coach, Sergio, not the players.
Sergio, you know, for me, Sergio Busquets set the tone for this game because he came out for the Granada goal from the set piece and made two half-hearted challenges. The first one, he just sort of hung a leg out. And then the second one, he couldn't really make a challenge because the player was inside the penalty box. And that really, to me, said it's a kind of half-hearted, from one of the most experienced players, a very half-hearted start to the game. Just here, watch, like, comes out, doesn't even make I wouldn't even call it a challenge, the first one, just sort of hangs a leg up. From a player of that experience, I mean, really and truly, you're looking at guys like that to come out and not allow them to get in that position, particularly so early in the game. And I think that, for me, just set the tone. He should be one of the leaders. And I think that kind of example, not just today, but just really travels all the way through the team, because there's a lot of youngsters in that team as well. But let's be quite frank about it. You know, Real Madrid are not a good side. Atleti are...
They're not
be strong again. Sorry,
Real Madrid not a good side.
No, they were lucky to win yesterday. They're not a good side by their standards. And Barcelona are even worse. They're absolutely bang average this season.
Barcelona have two more games this week. Casey, do you think Koeman can turn it around in time?
That's a really good question, because I don't know if he has the resources to do it the way that he wants to play. I mean, I see these kids come through and I've not seen anything dynamic from anyone that's kind of come through that youth system. You know, you used to be seeing guys come through and go, oh, wow, I see where this guy has made it to the first team. Right now, you've made it to the first team because they've sold everybody else or had to get rid of everybody else because they can't afford them. It's an opportunity, but I don't know if the quality's there. That's going to be the big question mark. You're asking Memphis Depay to be your star. You know, your Coutinho, you've talked about, who hasn't barely played, looked today like he's barely played. You know, Araujo was your best attacking player as a center back. There's so many questions, you know, asked of this side, and I just don't know if Ronald Koeman has the players to be able to be what we all think Barcelona should be. The fans, those of us neutral who are just so used to seeing this Barcelona side over the years, and I don't think so. But I don't think anybody else who comes in is going to be able to do the job either. So that's the big issue.
Chaka, to Casey's point, and also to Craig's point, you think there's a real threat Barcelona could miss top four?
Yeah, without question. And listen, we. A few months removed from having the same discussion around Juventus in Serie A. And I think, listen, given what we saw here today, and Barcelona have been better this season, But what you witnessed today at home to Granada, injuries aside, it does, if you're a Barcelona fan, you're worried. Mm-hmm. You genuinely are worried as to, because we are talking about a club with massive debt, we're talking about a club trying to work its way out of a crisis. If they don't qualify for the Champions League and at least have that as a carrot for bringing in talent, as to bring in additional revenue, the hole just keeps getting deeper. And given how deep it is, that's a worrying prospect.
Barcelona right now then sits seventh in the table, looking up at a lot of teams, among them Atletico Madrid. Atleti coming off a couple of scoreless games in Champions League against Porto and then on the weekend against Atleti Club in La Liga play. Casey, when you look at this Atleti team over the last couple games, what's your main concern?
Yeah, that's clearly my main concern is scoring goals. Suarez hasn't kicked into gear. Obviously they've relied on Angel Carrera to score some goals. But there was an interesting set in that match the other day. Correa had three shots, scored three goals. You know, you can't count on that the whole time. They hope that Griezmann can somehow catch fire again, but he still looked like he was just uninterested in the match the other day. DePaul, he's done well. Trippier is working hard, but it seems like when they get to that final third, there's just nothing there. They have to hope that Suarez catches fire and gets back to the form of last season. Otherwise, it's going to be a grind for Atletico Madrid, and they're going to have to really look to, again, hope to score a goal off a set piece, hope to maybe score a goal on a counterattack. You know, Getafe, the same thing, are struggling. So here's an opportunity for Atletico Madrid to go, you know, just around the corner to their neighbors and see if they can kickstart this season offensively.
Gemma, to be fair, we've seen Atleti struggle in the past and especially last season come out and win La Liga title. How worried are their fans right now coming off these back-to-back performances without a goal?
Yeah, of course, they are disappointed, because especially this weekend's game, it was so frustrating for them. And I agree that it is a goal problem. They are having a problem in the forward line, because not like Barcelona, comparing to Koeman's team, they bite from the minute zero, they try, they fight, they have a leader in the coach, Figo Simeone, but they are in lack of, in some part, good luck, but also the talent in the forward line. They have it, but they are not trying to. They are not finding the way to find the best shape of Suarez. Joao Felix also unlucky with the red card. Griezmann, we're going to see how he can go back to his best version when he was in Atletico after two deception years at Barcelona.
No goals so far for Griezmann in his time at Atleti. What about Real Madrid, who Craig says aren't any good but are top of the table?
Oh, I don't think they're a great side. I think they were lucky yesterday. There was a deflected goal, and then the ball that came off the shoulder of the excellent Karim Benzema. I thought,
but it's kind of classic Real Madrid, isn't it?
It's what? Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Classic Real Madrid. Even when they're bad, they're still good enough to win.
Well, they got a huge slice of luck there, and obviously this is bad defending, and the defender ducks and the goalkeeper comes out. You don't duck here even if the keeper shouts. You just clear your lines, and you can't leave Karim Benzema around. Look, he threw Canavingo on, he threw Isco on, he made some change, took Casemiro and Modric off. It was kind of getting desperate for them.
Rodrigo came on there, yep.
Rodrigo came on. I think the difference between the teams winning the league this year could honestly come down to one guy, and that is Karim Benzema. We've just talked about Atleti, and can they get Suarez firing again? Can they get the link up with Griezmann? Can they get João Felix into the balance as well? I think Real Madrid know it's how can they just keep the supply chain going to Karim Benzema, and if they do, they could win this league just down to one man alone.
He's got six goals, Shaka, five Amazing. Assists in the first five games of the La Liga season. It's a historic start.
Listen, for as much that Karim Benzema has won and for as much plaudits as he's gotten, he's still so underrated, I think, in European football. What he brings to Real Madrid is simply incredible. And you're seeing it even more now, where that talent base that they've been able to rely on, especially post-Cristiano Ronaldo, continues to age. Yet still, Karim Benzema continues to find the back of the net as needed. And to the point about where this Real Madrid team goes, as far as this league goes, even as the likes of Casemiro and Modric get a little bit older and maybe slow down, you can get those different looks through Camavinga, whether you can get some consistency out of Vinicius Jr. And so right now, while I'm with Craig in as far as Real Madrid and their own bar goes, mm-hmm. this isn't a great team. In the league this season, I think this is a team most capable of hurting you in the most ways. That being said, you have Atletico Madrid, equally talented, and I've been talking a lot about identity. You know what you get from them week in, week out.
Mm. Casey, who do you think is the favorite in La Liga?
Yeah, I think it's clearly Real Madrid right now. I really felt that Atletico Madrid was best poised to repeat, but not what I've seen so far this season. Real Madrid, you know, give Vinny Jr. some credit. He's been the real creative force to allow Benzema to be able to, you know, do what we know, what he does so well. But I think we still, I'm not going to write off Atletico Madrid right now because, you know, we know the type of team they are. And they can win ugly, and they can make things difficult for their opponents. I felt bad for Valencia yesterday because I thought they played really well for long stretches of the game. Great to see Musa come off the bench and be as influential as he was, you know, missing a lot of that preseason injured and then not getting as many minutes. So fingers crossed for the U.S. national team. He continues to get better, but I really feel right now from what I've seen in these, you know, opening weeks that it's Real Madrid's to lose.
Gemma, what are they saying in Madrid about Vinicius Jr.? They must be in love with the young Brazilian and how he's playing right now.
Yes, of course. You know, they have been expecting that for so long because they sold Vinicius Jr. like a big star when he arrived 2 seasons ago. I think it was too much to put on his shoulders. He was 17 years old. He was difficult to handle that pressure for him. He got problems with the injuries. Now everything is good for him. He's good at scoring. He's lucky. He's good at assisting. He's got this big connection with Benzema, a player who used to criticize him. So Real Madrid fans are delighted with that because they also they see that. They probably started in the La Liga opening with some difficulties. They see that Atletico de Madrid had probably a better squad, but they are managing to win very difficult games. I think that match day on Mestalla was a key game because it's going to be very, very difficult for the rest of the teams to make 3 points in Mestalla with that Bordalas team, Valencia. So they are delighted with Vinicius, also with Benzema, and also with the rest of the youngsters, Camavinga and Rodrigo especially.
Gemma, Casey, thank you very much. Plenty of La Liga action coming up in the midweek. It starts on Tuesday with a slate of matches, including, Getafe against Atletico Madrid, the defending champions, away, trying to get back on the right side of things. Good games Wednesday. Sevilla-Valencia should be an interesting matchup. Real Madrid at home against Mallorca. And then Barcelona wrap things up Thursday with a visit to Cadiz.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, let's turn our attention to the Premier League, where we find a three-way tie atop the table. Chelsea 3-0 winners away on the weekend against Spurs. Manchester United 2-1 winners away against West Ham. Liverpool up there as well. For more on this, let's welcome in Don Hutchison to the show, our good friend. There he is. Don, the other day on the show, we were talking about that you kind of, based on what we've seen so far in the Premier League season, I think it was pretty much unanimous on the show yesterday, everyone is saying that Chelsea are the favorite. You agree?
Listen, I had City favourites at the very start of the season, but they're slowly diminishing. We all talk about their lack of goals and their lack of a number nine. So Chelsea are, I think, emerging. I wouldn't write Liverpool off just yet. I think Virgil van Dijk's huge for them. He makes them tick. Everything about them looks a little bit calmer. But you see what Thomas Tuchel's now brought to this Chelsea side. He's an elite manager. He was talking today and he got asked the questions about what type of manager he is. And he said, I'm a simple man. I make simple decisions. And what I mean by that, this is what I interpret him meaning by that, is normally at half-time, and I'm pretty sure Xhaka and Craig will vouch for it, when you get given instructions at half-time, the manager then normally gives you 15 minutes to try and carry out his instructions. Then if things are not happening, you see a raft of changes or so many managers making changes in and around the hour mark. Thomas Tuchel doesn't wait for anyone. He put Hudson-Odoi on one game last season. He took him straight back off again. He took Saul off last week. He took Mason Mount off this week and brought on Kante. So he sees things on the pitch and he's not shy in making changes. It doesn't matter which and who the personnel is.
Has anyone looked better in Chelsea so far?
No, I don't think so. Liverpool have looked pretty good. Before we go back to Chelsea briefly, let me just touch on City. A little bit of deja vu here. I mean, Don and I in particular had a conversation about City and Man United last year. And it was at a time when City were struggling. I think it might have been a little later in the season, maybe
November,
October, November. And we were talking about putting runs together. And City did, right? They went on an amazing run, I think 19 games or something like that. I can't remember. It was an amazing run. It just obliterated the rest of the field. We can't rule that out. They're having their problems at the moment. We know the front line's an issue. But we can't rule out them doing that again. This manager figuring this out, getting De Bruyne back in the team fit. We can't rule that out. But what we do know is Chelsea, particularly with the introduction of Lukaku, are strong. What he did yesterday, he had a Tottenham team that pressed him early. Now, Tottenham didn't play particularly well with the ball in terms of creating chances, but they ruffled the feathers of Chelsea. Mm. They didn't allow Chelsea to play, and Chelsea's passing was a bit erratic and a bit quick, and they weren't able to control the game as they did. And as Don said, he recognised that at halftime and said, need to get control of the middle of the park. Amazing substitution, amazing turnaround. Chelsea then obliterated Tottenham. It should have been five. And when managers get it wrong, we criticise them. And when they get it right, that's what you see. And I'm afraid in the second half, Tottenham just were not at the races. And Chelsea, with that substitution, controlled the game. So listen, they're in a great spot. But I personally think it's going to be a real bun fight this year between the four of them. Mm.
Xhaka, you giving the credit for yesterday's victory to Tuchel as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see how you don't, given the changes he made. N'Golo Kante coming off the bench, who continues to amaze as he does. And the thing about this top four race, and there's not a lot to pick between the top four, but the more I see Chelsea, the more I recognise ways that they can hurt you, or they have more ways to hurt you than everybody else in the team. And while City are defending champions, and we know exactly how good they are, we know exactly how good those individuals are, you feel they can only hurt you one way. with that dynamic midfield. Whereas I think Chelsea can do it so many others from set pieces, given the height that they have, particularly at the back. And we saw that in the opening goals against Spurs. With a midfield who can score, with one of Europe's top strikers in Romelu Lukaku. I just feel they have more ways. And then while we're talking about Liverpool, who have matched Chelsea result for result so far this season, we started off talking about, is this going to be the Liverpool of last season or the Liverpool of two seasons ago? And I think that's still up in the air, despite how good the start is. Remember, it was, we got to maybe mid-December when Liverpool was still top of the Premier League. And then all of a sudden, the injury crisis really took hold and things just started to fall apart for them. They haven't freshened that squad in the way that others have. And now, so while we still know exactly how good that starting 11 can be, we're waiting to see, can they cope with another crisis, or can they cope with a crisis, any crisis, as well as the others can?
Oh, and what about Harry Kane?
Well, let's get to that.
What about Harry Kane? He looked like a man that's playing for a team that's going absolutely nowhere.
Does he look like a guy who's bitter that he didn't get the move he wanted?
No, I don't.
He hasn't scored, no goals, no assists, nothing.
I don't know.
I don't think he looks bitter.
You don't think it's a hangover from not getting the move he wanted?
Make of it what you like. But I think Harry Kane buckled. Listen, if you want to push for that move, push for that move. It doesn't matter what people
say. It was half-hearted, wasn't it?
Correct. It doesn't matter what people say about you. It doesn't matter. If you're pushing for that move, and we've seen some people upset.
So you're saying don't turn up to camp. Don't turn up to camp.
I'm saying if you have your mind that made up about it, you make it happen, however you do. But you buckle to the pressure, you don't get to then 2 weeks in. You don't get people to say, Harry.
Harry Kane's attempt at forcing a move was the epitome of Tottenham Hotspur. Soft. Right? Soft. And to come out then and talk about, I love the fans and I am happy to be here and all that. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everybody in the planet knew that you wanted a move. Mm. Right? And nobody denied you that move, really. Even Tottenham fans are going, I can't deny him the move because wants to move to a club that are going somewhere. So everything about it was just soft. And now he finds himself in a team he's sort of... And I said to you before on this show, it might not be something you said I'm not going to throw that out there. He's bitter or he's upset or he's angry. I don't know. But subconsciously, as a player, when you don't get that move, it is difficult then to perform at the level that you have been.
And yesterday, Don, on Sunday, we see him playing in the number 10 role. What'd you make of that?
That was ludicrous. I mean, it was a gamble from Nuno. It was a team and an 11 that was different. It was left field. It was a little bit desperate. And Harry Kane off the left-hand side, that's never going to work in a million years. I mean, people might point to the amount of assists he got last season playing in a deeper role, but that's all well and good when you're playing as a 9 and you're dropping in spaces and you've got a good relationship with Son. But to play Son through the middle and Harry Kane off the left, he would have saw that as a little bit of a kick in the teeth. Now, Nuno's quite a pragmatic manager. You look at the results he had for Wolves last season, and Wolves fans will tell you they weren't the most exciting side to watch. And Harry Kane, I don't think he's bitter. I don't think he's that type of player. But what I would say is, and I think the lads might agree, when a move doesn't come off, and like them or loathe them, these super agents, they get the job done. And Harry Kane, his camp were poor not getting that move. Look at Ronaldo on match day one for Juve. He was on the bench on match day one. Match day two, he said, and him, his agent said, we're done. We're never playing for Juve again. All of a sudden, then, he's gone. And Harry Kane might be looking at the team, the manager, the way they're functioning. The week before, they had Højbjerg in midfield with Oliver Skip and Harry Winks. That's not going to create chances for Harry Kane. So it might be a case of his numbers dropping dramatically this season.
Don, who do you think's regret is worse here? City for not buying Kane or Spurs for not selling him?
Good question. I think, listen, when you go back to match day one and Tottenham beat Man City, Daniel Levy was sitting in the stand thinking, I've had a result. The number that I'm led to believe was £130 million. The window was still open. So Daniel Levy was thinking 130, I could actually ask 140 because City have lost their first game. They might be a little bit desperate. Now, all of a sudden, the window closes Harry Kane's not scored in his first four games. He missed the first one. That's not happened since 2015. And all of a sudden now City are thinking, well, do we go back in January and pay 100 plus? Or actually, do we put all our money into someone like Erling Haaland and get him for close to 10 years? And it might be a case of Man City thinking that way. So Harry Kane and his camp has left themselves in a really tricky position.
Hmm. You think the window's closed on a Kane move from Spurs?
I think so. Well, Sydney's a city,
right.
And anytime soon. Given how things played out between City, Spurs, Daniel Levy, and including Harry Kane in this, if I've got 100 million, why am I going to frustrate myself? Why am I going and probably the better part of a transfer window and tie up my entire transfer budget in chasing a player that either I won't get or I won't get until 11:59 and the last of the transfer window? I think that's counterproductive. I don't think many clubs with that kind of money want to do business with Daniel Levy.
Never mind Kane not scoring. They've just lost 6 goals in 2 games. Should have been more, actually, against Palace and Chelsea. Could have been close to 10. That's a problem too.
Let's move on. Elsewhere Sunday, Manchester United 2-1 winners away against West Ham. Incredible finish in this one. Jesse Lingard, your late game winner. Surprise, surprise, Cristiano Ronaldo scored as well. 4 in 3 games for him now since joining Manchester United. But really the story of this one is the missed penalty late from West Ham. Mark Noble substituted on to take the penalty. It was his first and only kick of the match. And of course, he missed it. Don, you were extremely mad online about this. You were so mad you spelled ridiculous wrong again.
Don, are you there?
Sorry, I missed that. I thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was ludicrous, Sebi, I must admit. I mean, I sent out a tweet yesterday and my phone was red hot yesterday. It was red hot this morning. And I answered a few tweets, and what I was basically saying is, David Moyes asked Mark Noble, did he fancy the penalty? Well, no pro is going to sit there on the sideline and say, no, Gaffer, I don't fancy it. You think and you back yourself to score. Now, the problem is Mark Noble had a tracksuit on. He wasn't even warm. He got asked to take one shot. You're going to get one kick in the game, and you've got to score a penalty in a hostile atmosphere against Man United with the last kick of the game. Now, I got asked the question, well, you know, you should be able to take a penalty. You should be able to take a penalty, even if you haven't had a kick. And what I was trying to say is, and I stand by this, it's probably a thing that you can't measure, Sebi, is how is he feeling? Because if David Moyes has put Mark Noble under 1% more pressure and duress, then that's a bad decision. And then someone said to me, well, what if he scored? What if Mark Noble scored? And I still stand by, if David Moyes put him under more pressure by asking him to take a penalty, by taking his tracksuit off and having one kick of the game, it's still a bad decision. And in the end, it just looks really bad. Aaron Cresswell was on the pitch, good technician. Yarmolenko was on the pitch, good technician. Declan Rice was on the pitch. And you just think it was a gamble from David Moyes, but it was a gamble he didn't need to take.
As a goalie, you love seeing a guy come in cold, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Without question, especially somebody who you probably know which is their preferred side. And let's be honest, while good penalty takers can switch things up, to Don's point, you have somebody coming off the bench without at all being warm, he's going to do exactly what's comfortable to him. And you see that from the get-go. David De Gea knows exactly where Mark Noble is going to go, reads him well, makes his save. I listen, David Moyes gets paid the big bucks to make these decisions. And
he owned it after the match.
And so he should. That's not ours to make. He knows those players better than most. But sitting on the outside, as we all are, I still say lean on somebody who's on the pitch. I feel even if that penalty is missed, it sends a message that you are trusting people out there at a certain degree. Now, if you're one of the other 10 who are left out on that pitch, and you see Mark Noble coming in cool as it is, it's seeing that my manager doesn't trust me. And that, for me, has a bigger long-term knock-on than just dropping 2 points or whatever it is against Man U.
I mean, it's not the World Cup final, but it's, you know, it's still a big...
Is there any defending Moyes here? I mean, he said Mark Noble was his best option.
I
would rather see somebody on the field. I'd rather see somebody on the field take it. As Don pointed out, you know, Cresswell is a good striker of the ball. Rice is a good striker of the ball who has taken penalties. But they're just taking penalties. These are professional footballers, right? Mm-hmm. Most of them. We saw kids taking penalties for England in a Euro 2020 final under the most intense pressure. And OK, two or three of them, whatever it was, they missed. But this, nobody could take a penalty. Lanzini was on the pitch. Good technician. Was Fornal still on the pitch?
Don't know.
Can't remember. Anyway, just played for Spain. Yarmolenko was on the pitch. All these guys were on the pitch. There was no need to do it. So it's one of those, the buck stops with you as a manager. If he comes on and scores, it's great. Nobody bats an eyelid. David Moyes, great decision that. Didn't go his way. I would personally like to have seen one of the players on the field go, no, I'm taking it. Mm. One of the senior players or one of the attacking players, I'm stepping up here, not a substitute.
Mark Noble's missed penalty.
Well,
go on, Don.
Sammy, it begs the question as well. In West Ham's next game, if Mark Noble's on the bench and they get a penalty in the last dying minutes, are they going to ask him to do the same thing? So it's just unnecessary stress.
Yeah.
If they get a penalty in the 48th minute, what are you going to do? Bring him on? They got a penalty in the 34th minute.
Somebody would have had to take it if it had happened in the 68th minute.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You know, right. That was exactly. Just after half time. He's not bringing Mark Noble
exactly.
To take the penalty. Somebody would have had to have taken the penalty. I mean, it's part of the problem these days with some of these
players. Has he overthought it or what? Is that just?
I think so.
I think he's overthought it. But the other part of the problem is players defer at all times now, it seems, to management. Where there's not enough leaders on the field to say, no, I don't care. Right? I don't care if you're bringing him on to take the penalty or not. He's coming on, I'm taking it.
Mark Noble's missed penalty, one of the stories of the match. I think the other story of the match was a couple of penalty shouts for Cristiano Ronaldo. Three.
No, two for him.
Two, yeah. But two on Cristiano Ronaldo, who I think usually gets these calls, or has in the past in Spain, has in the past in Italy. They say, you know, the game is refereed differently in England. Is that what we're seeing here, Craig? Or are these just mistakes?
Well, I didn't think.
I don't think the first two were penalties that we just showed.
You don't think that was a penalty?
No, I especially given the way the league has been refereed this season, I don't think any of the first two are penalties. This, on the other hand.
No, I thought the Soufal one could have been because he hung a leg out there. Now, the argument is that he might have been going down here, but it's such a rash challenge from Zuma. That's got to be a penalty. I personally think Manchester United should have got at least two penalties there on Ronaldo.
I thought the Soufal one that you did, I thought Ronaldo initiated as much of that contact as Soufal did.
People think he can just change direction and go straight that way. There's always a little movement as it turns to go.
Fine, but Ronaldo and Soufal come closer to each other. Ronaldo cuts left and they come together. Given the way that the game has been refereed this season, it doesn't surprise me in this. I don't think that was a penalty. I don't.
If you stick your leg out as a... You can put his arms up all he wants.
Yeah, I agree.
And once you hang this leg out there, I think that's big trouble.
I think that's half defender, half attacker on that, and I'm giving the defender the benefit of
it. All right.
Right?
But I'm not having the Zuma one.
We'll agree to disagree on that one. The Kurt Zuma one.
Yep.
I don't care what league, what year, where, who's involved. How that is not given in real time by the referees beyond me. Mm. How does somebody sitting in a booth not say to the referee, you need to have a look at this, is simply beyond me. Because with my most claret West Ham glasses on, that is a penalty all day, every day.
Don, you agree?
No. I worked with Chris Foy, Dion Dublin and Mark Pugac, and we broke all of them penalties down today. The first one on Soufal, 100% the penalty. I mean, Soufal sticks out a right leg and he fouls Ronaldo. That's definitely a penalty. The Cresswell one, the little tug, was a little bit like Simicass. That wasn't a penalty. And we broke the third one down and we had it in real super slow motion. And Ronaldo's right foot was trailing along the floor just to sort of make that initial I wouldn't say dive, but he went down really, really early. In real time, by the way, I was with Xhaka. I thought 1,000,000% a penalty. It was only when we broke it down and we put it in super, super slow motion that Ronaldo's trailing right foot was dragging along the floor as if to say, I'm going down early.
Well, just to be clear, though, when Don says 100% and a million, we know what Don
right,
is like
right.
a percentage.
Yes, yes. His math teacher was
also anything.
Same
that, that could mean any. When Don says 100%, that could mean anything.
I
we
mean,
know that.
Ronaldo's foot can trail. I mean, that's, you're allowed to. But Zuma was absolutely clearing him out, no matter what happened. I can see people looking and saying, yeah, he was going to. But he'd beaten the defender, he'd sucked him in. He dropped the shoulder, he touched it past him, and then Zuma commits himself. He's going to wipe him out no matter what happens. I thought he should have had a penalty there.
Did West Ham have a penalty shot as well on Suchek?
Right, and absolutely. And I'll tell you why. Because, watch, Wan-Bissaka, Suchek doesn't make a challenge, right? Suchek's trying to get himself in position. Watch Wan-Bissaka go to ground. Watch me a screen. He goes to ground to make a challenge, doesn't get anyone near the ball, completely wipes out the back of Thomas Suchek. Mm. How the hell is that not a penalty kick? Tell me. I heard somebody say, well, Suchek was trying to get his body. Yeah, he was trying to get his body in the way. But he wasn't the one that went to ground to initiate a challenge. It was Wan-Bissaka. And once he did that, he completely cleaned out Thomas Suchek. I have no idea why VAR looked at that and said, no, nothing to see here.
It seems like nothing is a penalty in England. Have they gone too far, the refs, kind of just letting people play?
Listen, I have no problem with referees allowing a more physical game. None at all. And this is not the first time we've had complaints about it. Not the first time involving Manchester United. We've had complaints about it. I have no problem with referees allowing the game to get to this point. I do believe that while we've seen referee go to the sidelines more this season than we have previously, I still, and this challenge is a perfect example. That needs to be reviewed. We've now had a couple in this game that if the referee reviews and you say, well, that's just kind of how they're going this year, fair enough. But to not even have a look at that, not have a look at some of the others that we've already witnessed, even though I've already stated my position, I think is not using the technology in the way that is meant to.
I'm intrigued what Don and Chris Foy had to say on this one. When Don was off earning an extra paycheck.
Don't give a percent.
But Don, I don't know what you're going to say about this, but at what point are you allowed to clean out another player in the box and it's not a penalty, Don?
Craig, we both said penalty. We both said stonewall penalty, all of us. Everyone watching it, we just said it's a penalty. The only thing we were worried about was the offside, but he wasn't. He was onside. Wan-Bissaka just takes. Wan-Bissaka's not even sure he's there. I think Wan-Bissaka sees the ball. He doesn't see Suchek. He's trying to clear the ball. It's Xhaka, 1,000,000% a foul.
Well, yeah, these are. I think the new refereeing directives are helping the game. However, this is a real. That one in particular is a real head-scratcher for a player to look at and go, right, what's the thought process? Because he's just cleaned them out. So, yeah, some two or three decisions in this game that were dubious.
You know, the only thing that makes sense here, and it's not supposed to be a part of the game, is that Manchester United have a couple of calls that go ignored and the referee just sees this as kind of evening things up slightly.
Referees do that?
They shouldn't. Well, and again, as players, we feel they do it. As players, we always say that. That's what referees do. And even when you go into a dressing room at halftime, the manager will say, listen, we got away with one there. Be careful from now on. Or they've had a man sent off. You all be careful with every single challenge. That's how we feel as players in the dressing room. Referees tell you totally differently, of course. But you see this and you just, you know, all you can do is throw your hands up and say, see, that's exactly what we've seen all along.
On a different note, what a scary start it has been from Ronaldo. I mean, I'm amazing. Yeah. I mean, that could be the difference for Man United. It's not, you know, not Rafael Varane, not Jadon Sancho.
You can't be surprised by it, right?
No, not surprised. And, you know, an amazing specimen who just keeps who just keeps doing it.
That's the thing. You can't be surprised it's Ronaldo, but he's how old now? 37.
To start four goals already.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing.
We're talking about one of the best goal scorers the game has ever seen, and on that alone, you think, yeah, you expect that. But we're talking about, he's about 37 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, it's how good he's been is simply ridiculous. It's beyond human.
All right, plenty more on this for sure on the Monday edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Of course, the boys record a couple times a week, available in podcast form. You can find it.
Jules even gets to talk
over
on the
website, at least on video.
He has to wear a Juventus shirt or something.
Yep. Jules always well dressed. Of course, Carabao Cup coming up this week, available for you on ESPN Plus. Man City in action on Tuesday. Chelsea in action on Wednesday, as are Manchester United and Spurs. And, of course, your beloved West Ham, Shaka.
Yep, we've turned it around.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Don't miss today's edition of Extra Time. The boys taking your questions off social media. A plenty of good stuff in today's edition, including some real difficult math for our good friend Don Hutchison. And his math teacher actually did get another question in on today's edition.
There was a very difficult mathematical equation in there, I must admit.
Yeah, I thought both of you actually handled it quite well.
Shaq was waffling about something.
Thanks to Jim and Casey. Thanks to Don as well. Gentlemen, always great to be with you. See you next time.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this edition of ESPN FC.
I missed that, Sebby. I missed the heat.
I know you have. Have you missed it, Craig?
Live. Missed what?
Nothing. Nothing.
What, your intro?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not really, no.
No.
I heard it last week.
Did you? Okay, good.
Not that stupid.
That's enough?
I've got a memory, you know. It might be a bad memory, but I've got a memory.
You're a once-a-month kind of guy?
Yeah.
With Sebby's intro?
All right, Don Hutchison with us well. Let's not forget about our good friend. Dan the Orange Man asks, is 2 or 3 days enough time for players to recover after a match?
Yes.
Is it difficult for most players to play on both the weekend and in European
competition?
One of the
problems is, no, it's not easy, but you know, one of the problems is, psychologically, some of these players have been told now through sports scientists that it's not enough time and that the levels of whatever lactic acid and all the other stuff are low, and that feeds to managers. And so
I was about to say, is it just the sports scientists or is it the managers too? I feel like you hear that a lot from managers about.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not, and you know, I think one of the things is avoiding injury, and I think there's more worry about avoiding injury and leaving a player out for that, then I don't know. I think sometimes it's gone a little too far. I don't know what the guys think.
Well, it's kind of different now.
2 or 3 days is, you know, I think ideal.
In normal times.
Two or three days every week, if we're talking midweek games every week, I don't think that's enough.
Which is kind of where we're at.
Yes,
in terms
which is
of
kind of where we've been for the last year or two, because
We're at 3 or 4 days at least.
Because 2 games a week, right? Because of COVID and the compressed schedules, etc.
We're going to have 3 games this week.
Yeah, it's too much to do it every week.
Much every week. No. But you do it once or twice a month, once or twice a month, or 3 or 4 times a month, you have that week rest or something like that. Somewhere around there with the weeks. Once or twice a month.
Hold on.
I got to get this right because Don's listening. You know what he's like. Once or twice a month to play midweek means
Jesus.
Oh, man.
Oh, Chad.
Two or three times you don't play. Two or three times you don't play midweek.
Do you want a calculator?
No, I'm good. I got it right. Moving on.
Don, did you understand that?
No, I can't remember what the question is.
All I'll say is Shaq has gone soft, because when you play in the championship, Sebi, you play two games a week the whole season. Mm. And you've got to be tough. There's no time to be tired.
Look at that. Tough Don Hutchison.
Subconsciously, the players are getting told they're tired sometimes. Mm.
Don, I feel bad that you are constantly getting these questions with percentages. It gets old. So let's say you were dribbling the ball 5 kilometers an hour one way, and Craig was running 7 kilometers per hour towards you. At what point would Craig tackle you? At midfield, three-quarters field, one-third of the field, or none of the above?
So where are we starting from? The goal line?
Yep.
So we're starting from the goal line. I'm running at 5K. Craig's behind me.
No, no.
Craig's coming from in front
Craig's
of
the,
you.
Craig's
coming
on the
from
other,
in front of you.
On the other goal line, he's running at 7 kilometers an hour towards you.
Oh, I see.
No, he I don't think you probably, do see, Don.
I do. I've got it now. I think Craig would catch me at just shy of the halfway line.
Right, where you hit that ball from.
I'm going to go center circle
right
on Don's side of the pitch.
Right.
Knee high.
Ooh.
I'm going to go knee high challenge as well.
It's a very difficult one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I don't know. I don't
think anybody knows.
I don't think this is the right answer.
Shall we talk about how many times a week again?
No, we're good. I think the math is already.
What you were trying to say.
No.
You were trying to say if it was only.
Right.
If it was only.
If you played
2 weeks in a month.
Right. If you play midweek once or twice a month, that means you don't play midweek.
Twice
or three times a month, because it's 4 weeks.
What?
So once or twice.
There's some not some months have got.
Yeah, but oh, we average it out.
Right. Let's move on, shall we? How difficult is it as a player to adjust to a new manager mid-season? Chaka?
Nah, couple of weeks.
Really?
Max.
Well, you're a goalie, so maybe things are different.
Well, just really hardest workers on the pitch.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. Craig?
I don't know. I mean,
I guess it depends on if they're doing something different, right?
Yeah. Also depends whether you're on the bench or not.
No, right. I don't think it takes them long to. It just depends on the playing squad. I don't know.
Don?
Particularly.
Couple of days. I watched Cagliari play against Lazio. Cagliari have started pretty poorly, and Walter Mazzarri took over. He had probably 3 or 4 days. They put in one of their best performances of the season so far and should have won the game. They ended up drawing the game. They should have won it, but I think a couple of days.
For Mr. Burley, favorite moment on or off the pitch with the birthday man, Henrik Larsson? How long were you guys together? At Celtic?
2.5 years.
2.5.
Keep it on the pitch, because I think that's safest for all of us.
Why? Were you involved?
No.
Like you might have showed up for a party or two.
No. Nope.
What are you trying to say?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Favorite? I mean, it's definitely from the 97-98 season at Celtic, when we... Rangers had won 9 titles in a row, and we stopped them. We won the first title that Celtic had won in 10 years with a very good side. Favourite moment would be the final game where we had to beat St Johnstone at home to win the league, because Rangers could also win the league that day. They were playing away at Dundee United, and Henrik scored after a couple of minutes or five, I can't remember what it was, scored a brilliant goal from 20 yards, and that ultimately set us on track for the title.
You know who's playing at...
And then lifting the trophy at the end with all the guys.
You know who's playing at Dundee United?
Yes. Is it John Harkes' son?
Yep, Ian Harkes scored a big goal on the weekend.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yep.
Well, I didn't see it. I saw somebody...
Saw it on Twitter or something. So.
What's that got to do with...
You just mentioned...
Henrik Larsson at
nothing.
Celtic.
Nothing at all.
You just mentioned...
Yeah, he's turned 50, Henrik, but he was a great player. So, lots of great memories from that time with that team.
Final question comes in from Don Hutchison's math teacher for Craig. Did you play golf in your prime footballing days like Gareth Bale, or is it a, quote, retirement sport for you?
I didn't play as much.
But you did play, yeah?
Yeah, not very often. Not,
why, just another time?
Yeah, I suppose, just didn't... I don't remember how much we played, but certainly not as much as I play now, which is a lot.
Well, you know who plays a lot now is Don. He's always going on these lavish trips to Portugal, first golf, all over the place.
There's just jealousy in there, Sebi. You need me back in Division West. That's what you're hoping for.
Easy, steady. Things I don't need is Don Hutchison egging me on in West Hartford.
Shaq's not. Oh, you don't. Egging you on? Egging you on for what?
Yes. Hijinks.
Anyway,
shenanigans.
You've not hit many little. I'll rephrase that differently.
Yeah,
you've
yeah.
Not played much golf this year?
No, I haven't.
Why is that?
Oh, just.
Because you used to have a little outing now. And
I used
again,
to come down here.
At least once a
month. I used
month.
To come down here to play golf.
And then they stopped inviting you.
And then because of the pandemic, I just haven't been playing.
No, but the pandemic? We've not stopped playing during the pandemic.
Well, I've stopped.
You're taking a break?
Out. Yeah.
Just didn't have enough free time is probably what
correct.
It was. Yeah.
Correct.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks
you
to Don.
Golf?
No, I mean, with my buddies, but terribly. And not with anybody who, like, is good, because I get very self-conscious.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Sebi.
But if you ever want to invite me, you know, I'll let you pay for my round like
right.
you did for dinner that night.
I'll tell you what.
Okay. I'll
when be... he comes on Football Americas, you can come
there
play
you
golf
go.
With Craig.
All right.
How about
next
that?
Next week. What a moment.